Well, good afternoon and welcome, my friends. Yes, the Monday edition of The Flip Side coming your way on this September the 9th, a little after 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and I feel I've got a great show lined up for you today. And before we get to my special guest on this Monday, a quick check on how the markets started the week. Well, there was no major economic news today. The only report we got was consumer credit, which was expected to come in at 13 billion, came in somewhat lower at $10.4 billion, not giving any direction for the traders, and so Wall Street was reliant on any news coming out of the press conference being held in London with John Kerry this morning. The Dow was wallowing around the plus side by 50 points, and then a throwaway line at the press conference caused the Dow to soar into triple digits. I kid you not, this is the world we live in. At the conclusion of the press conference, a reporter asked Kerry what Syria needed to do to avoid a attack. And Kerry said, surrender all their chemical and biological weapons. Wall Street saw this as a sign, and was later confirmed when the Russian foreign minister said that it was a plan worth pursuing, and no sooner than that statement was made than the Senate announced it was postponing the vote scheduled for tomorrow till Wednesday. This also after the president's big press conference tomorrow night. Gold ended the day off $2. Call it the fear premium taken out of the gold market today. Gold closed at $13.86. Silver off 14 cents at $23.67. As I mentioned, Dow soaring triple digits and putting the Dow once again over 15,000 at 15,063. The yield on the 10-year Treasury remaining below 3% at 2.89. Oil obviously subject to ease intentions, if you will, off a dollar at 109.52. U.S. dollar today marginally weaker by 36 basis points at 81.80. And the mining index off ever so slightly. However, there were some winners in the mining complex. Rivet, symbol RVM, up almost 25% at $1.46. Northern Dynasty, NAK, up 7 at $2.33. Gold Resource, up 4.5 at $8.54. The only loser today in the metals mining complex of note is Paramount, PZG, off 6.25 at $1.32. My guest, I have known about for a number of years. We worked for the same network. However, our paths didn't cross until fairly recently, although I am very familiar with her work and hold her in high esteem because there are not many talk show hosts on the alternative network that have the courage of their convictions. So it is my great pleasure to welcome Deanna Spingola to the Flip Side. Deanna.
Hi, Robbie. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to have you on.
Well, thank you for your invitation.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've wanted to have a chat with you for so long, my dear.
Okay.
And in large part because I think we have both been along the same trail of discovery.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I think people in the truth movement, they are going to stumble into the truth whether they like it or not. And of course, my views of learning the truth is that you absolutely have to look at both sides of every issue and then draw your own conclusions. You can't accept the sound bites that some of the people in the alternative media repeat, nor can you accept the official version of anything historical. You really do have to do some research.
Oh, there's no question about that. So let me throw this curveball at you. Because, believe it or not, I did start to read your book, The Ruling Elite.
Did you finish it over the weekend?
I would be a genius if I said yes. I mean, let me put it to you this way. I so wish I had this information available to me a decade ago. It would have saved me so much time, frustration, and research because you pretty much kept every connection.
Well, I tend to be a little redundant, and I tend to fill in a lot of the details.
Yes.
But I think it's important to know all the names and the places and the dates, and I also like to have a timeline so that people can see what events happen within the same period of time, because I think it's really important.
Oh, absolutely. And your introduction, I think, obviously, is something I relate to, and that is, I guess, said, you know, history may not repeat, but it rhymes. I have to say, I'm a firm believer, like you are, that you know, history is there for us to use to avoid the mistakes that people have made in the past, and that is.
And that is so true. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but that is so true. But it's not the people that keep repeating the mistakes. It's the politicians, and it's people's ignorance of history that allows those politicians to get away with it. And it's also important that people know their accurate history, not just so that they can say, oh, look, they're doing the same thing that they did 100 years ago, but they have better technology. It's important to know our history so that we know who we are. because when the elite steal or conceal history from us, then we have no standing. We have no foundation. We lose sight of who and what we are and what we could be. So it's vital that we know history.
Oh, absolutely. And it's for that reason that if you understand history, you can obviously make sense of, what is taking place right before our very eyes now with Syria.
Oh, absolutely. And that's such an incredible shame. And it's the Middle East is, of course, it's the Israelis that are perpetuating this war, that are promoting it. And of course, they want Syria to be part of their domain because they want to own all that land or to control it, to control or to occupy all of that land from the Euphrates over to the Jordan, from the Jordan to the Euphrates. I think those are the two rivers. Anyway, all the way east, and they mean to control that. And of course, they occupy so many other countries, including the United States and England, of course, and Germany and so many other countries. And they've done it all through warfare and terrorism.
You know, while the Western press was enthusiastically reporting, the possibility of how Syria could avoid an attack by surrendering all its chemical and biological weapons, Russian television was reporting that Israeli intelligence was reporting that the rebels in Syria were planning on a chemical attack on Israel.
Well, Israel is always crying wolf to somebody, and it's just totally ridiculous. And if we want to talk about a government that uses chemical weapons, we better look in our own backyard here. We have used so many chemical weapons all over the world, starting very early, starting as early as World War II. And then, of course, you have to look at Vietnam and Agent Orange. And of course, what we've done in Afghanistan, or what the government has done in Afghanistan, is absolutely deplorable. In a book that I have, and from an author that I've had on my program a few times, Dr. Mohammed Meraki, has pictures, photos of the children that are victims of the chemical weapons that we have used in that country. And he's got page after page after page. And this is just terrible. And you can see the same kinds of pictures of people, survivors in Vietnam, who have been damaged by the chemical weapons that we use there. And if you want to talk about chemical weapons, they are being used against our own population. If you look at aspartame and fluoride and chemtrails and all the other solutions that are sprinkled or put into our food and drink, we lose in this country 900,000 people a year due to medical intervention, which of course includes all of those chemicals, and then add to that vaccinations. So, and I mean, that's 900,000 people a year that die, and we never hear about that in the news ever.
Well, certainly, and you wouldn't expect the media to remind Americans that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms gassed 80 women and children in a place called Waco, Texas.
Oh, indeed, yes. Yes, of course. What a terrible thing. Terrible thing. And that's just what we hear about. I mean, there are other incidents like that didn't kill as many people, but certainly are terrorism against the civilians.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I guess most people should know, if they didn't already, that it was Donald Rumsfeld negotiating with Saddam Hussein in the 90s and supplied him with the chemical weapons that Saddam used on the Kurds.
Well, that's not quite true. There's the picture, and we're all familiar with that picture. But that picture, what they were actually doing was Saddam Hussein was saying, no, thank you. And so that is why the United States went to war against Saddam Hussein, who did not use chemical weapons and did not buy chemical weapons. I've had a guest on my program, Bhutaina, who is from Baghdad and has told what actually happened. And what actually happened was that Saddam Hussein said no to the U.S. government. And so the U.S. government, within a few years, built up a case against Saddam Hussein, who was actually doing for his citizens what they were actually benefiting from the resources in their country. And, of course, that really annoyed all of the multinational corporations here in this country who wanted to go in and, of course, take over the oil industry and get certain concessions over there. And so they had to build up a case against Saddam Hussein, and the same as they are doing right now. And of course, we don't know where the intelligence came from then, maybe from Israel at that point in time. But it is lies, and yet we've always gone to war based on lies. Whether you're talking about the so-called civil war or the war that they're trying to ramp up right now. All of the wars that we have been engaged in, or that the United States government has started or been engaged in, were founded on lies and deceptions. Look at Tonkin. I mean, everything is based on a lie, and it's terrible that the American public.
Do you follow Ryan Dawson?
No. I know who he is.
He has a video out, and he's updated it, and he's about to release a new version. It's a great video. It's entitled "War by Deception."
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm. And he goes through in chronological order all the wars that we have known in our lifetime, and how they all obviously have this common theme that runs through them, and that was all wars are ultimately executed through deception. And there's no question, you know, what Obama is going to be doing tomorrow night is just another example of a war by deception. And you have to say, the one thing that the media is not reporting about as to who the beneficiaries of a war with Syria will be, and that AIPAC has apparently dispatched hundreds of its lobbyists to Washington to obviously push for the Israeli position on Syria before the Senate vote, which, you know, as I told you, was scheduled for tomorrow, but now, late word this afternoon, it's been postponed until Wednesday. In light of this new peace offer that Kerry inadvertently blurted out this morning.
Right. Well, when you're talking about the Israelis, and certainly the Israelis are behind this, and AIPAC and their lobbyists, and then you have the whole Mossad operation goes by, they say, by way of deception, we shall do war. And that has always been their tactic, is that they would lie to get us into war. And when you look at all the recent wars say, in the last 150 years, they've kind of been behind them all. And that's quite a claim, I know, but that is really quite true.
Well, unless you are a student of history, you would have a hard time reconciling with that. But, once again, it just illustrates the point in that, as you accurately point out, teaching Americans history has long been subjected to huge amounts of misinformation and manipulation.
Certainly, and that's been true since at least 1900, because the tax-free foundations took over the educational system at that time, and they decided, well, of course, we all know that the victors write the histories, but they really deliberately skewed our history from the very beginning and give us the official version of history, and it is so pathetic that people will not seek beyond what they've been told. And now with Common Core, which we talked about today on my program, with Common Core, it is going to be even worse, because they are just basically obedience training students to do exactly what they're told to do and not to think for themselves. And just the way that the system is set up, they simply will not have the capacity or the wherewithal or the skills that you usually should learn in school. They will not have the skills to conceptualize anything beyond what they are being told. And that is such a shame. Such a waste of human resources and our skills and our agency and our ability to draw conclusions. It's just awful.
Well, I have to throw this one in here, Deanna. I don't know whether you were aware of this, but Rush Limbaugh made a big announcement last week that he has done something he hasn't done in 20 years.
He told the truth?
And that he has written a new book. And his new book is a special book because it's designed for 10 to 13-year-olds. And it is, as he says, the real history about America. And unless you know where Russia's ideological center is, Rush has been unabashed about his strong belief in American exceptionalism.
Right.
Which is no different to Israeli exceptionalism, in that, they are God's chosen, therefore they can pretty much do what they please because of this lofty perch that they've been placed upon.
Right. And Rush always plays the left-right game, talking about all those Democrats, and, it's just so transparent. And of course, I wouldn't spend the money to buy his book. I might get it at the library and just, go through it real quick, but it's the official version of history. And it's very interesting to note that they come out with all of these books right around the time that they're going to go into another war, just to support what the government is doing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's all part and parcel of this worshipping of the military-industrial complex, which it never ceases to amaze me how blatant it is, especially on a weekend if you follow sports, because you go through all the military displays at football games. NASCAR has to be the worst when it comes to promoting the giant military-industrial complex.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, you see, they know where they can get extract the most patriotism from people is at these great big games where they have a lot of people who probably don't read, don't think much about history, don't think about what's going on. They just cater to the patriotism and the red, white, and blue and the flags. And of course, the whole aspect of a game is really designed to be kind of military. You have two teams playing against each other. They have uniforms, and they use the same rhetoric that they use the same rhetoric as the military. You know, we got to beat that team. We got to be victorious. We have to do this. We have to do that. And it's really all of the sports games are very, very militarized, and it is very, very deliberate.
Was it T.S. Lewis that is credited with saying, when fascism comes to America, it'll be wrapped in the flag carrying a cross?
Oh, yes, I'm sure. Yes, I'm sure that was him. And it certainly is true.
It is. In your journey of discovery, were you ever part of the so-called Christian community?
Which one?
I think I explained real briefly to you my awakening was thanks to Charles Paulson from Straight Gate Ministries. But we've got a short commercial timeout, and we'll be right back with Ian Spengler after these messages.
Effect Radio Network, the gem of the mountains. Learn more about the Micro Effect at themicroeffect.com.
The era of big government is over.
Welcome back to the flip side on this Monday. My special guest, Deanna Spengola. You can hear Deanna every day, Monday through Friday, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central Standard Time over at the Ex-Wife's Network, also known as RBN. No, Deanna, I asked you that question because my learning curve was in the early 90s. I was involved within the so-called Christian community while I was in Colorado. Jane Stopson from the Family Research Council used to be a regular guest on my show. And with the election of George Bush and the subsequent war on Iraq, I started to smell a rat within the Christian community. And so that's when I started digging. And, you know, fortunately for me, I ran into Charles Colson from Straight Gate Ministries, who was able to connect the dots for me, if you will.
Exactly.
Where I started, obviously, becoming familiar with how somebody like James Dobson or other leading evangelicals, if you will, had been hijacked by the Scofield Reference Bible.
Indeed, yes, absolutely. And of course, the focus on it occurred after World War II, where you had the Youth for Christ group, which was the result of Billy Graham. He built this up. It was just in time for the government's Cold War buildup. And then you had the election of Jimmy Carter, who was a Southern Baptist, I believe, a Sunday school teacher. And Rockefeller decided that that they would put up a you know, kind of a genteel religious fella, so that it would appeal to more of the population, because up until that point, the religious population in the country just did not participate in politics. They just didn't do that. And then, of course, you also had in 1973 something, a moral issue that they could politicize with abortion, when Roe versus Wade was passed by the Supreme Court. And that became another factor that really involved the people in this country, the religious people in this country, and because they wanted their participation. And then, of course, that led to the Christian Zionists, and of course, they got their take with the Scofield Bible. And the Scofield Bible and Scofield himself were funded by one Samuel Untermeyer and his group.
Yes.
So everything just typically leads back to a certain tribe, and they seem to be everywhere and anywhere, and they fund the people, they exploit the people who will benefit them, who will be their minions to drive their agenda.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I don't know if you know this, but Glenn Beck had a major revelation about 2 weeks ago, and that he made the announcement on his Blaze TV that he has proof beyond all reasonable doubt that America is the lost 13th tribe of Israel.
Well,
I'm sure that comes as a shock or surprise to you.
Well, he is a Christian Zionist, and I mean, there are a lot of people who are Christian Zionists, and it's very sad, because they're very deluded. They're very if they would only just look at the source documents, and Christians never seem to look at the Bible to see what Christ said about what was going on and about who the enemy was. So people just listen to their ministers or their bishops or their pastors or whatever without ever reading. If they would only open a book, whether you're talking about history or whether you're talking about the Bible, you need to know what the source material says.
You know, and not I was be watching, I try to watch as much foreign press as possible. I was watching Press TV over the weekend, and they were interviewing Christians in Syria, and they were doing this report that the rebels, who we are allegedly supporting, launched an attack on the oldest Christian city in Damascus. They bombed a monastery and an orphanage, and they were interviewing one of the folks from the orphanage who made the statement that they were fearful of the rebels because if Assad is driven from power, then the Christians in Syria would be subject to extermination by the Islamist rebels. And they made the point that Assad, who the U.S. is trying to boot from power, according to this person, was the last hope for Christian Syrians to protect them from the Islamist rebels.
And they always blame it on the Islamics, when in fact probably a lot of the chaos that's going on in the Middle East is probably perpetrated by the CIA and the Mossad, because that's the way they get things going. They say, oh, there's a lot of stuff, there's, you know, chaos reigning in the Middle East. And
from the Saudis as well.
Sure. Sure, because of their who leads their regime. And when you're talking about Christians, many of the Palestinians are Christian. Sure. And then you have to go back and say, well, what about the Armenian Christians and the slaughter that they experienced, you know, in the Ottoman Empire? And right. You look and see who was behind that. It was a group of people called the Young Turks. And
right.
So, like I say, it always goes back to the same people.
Now, the Young Turks is not a term that you hear too often in the media. Rather, folks at Fox News seem to be consumed with the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah. They're consumed with a lot of things at Fox.
Oh, tell
me about
it.
They really, really are minions, and of course it's all controlled. I mean, Rupert Murdoch, they're just Murdoch mouthpieces, and they are, well, all those people, Charles Krauthammer and that whole group, they're all neocons. They're all Trotskyites who came over here. Well, for instance, Bill Kristol. His father and family came over here in the 60s, and he worked for the CIA in England, then he came over here and started some magazines. And these people are just leftover Trotskyites who are using very subtle Leo Strauss kind of tactics to take over the government and to write the foreign policy for the U.S. government. And certainly since PNAC, since they organized PNAC back in when 98 is when they wrote the first letter to the president saying, oh, we've got to go do this, we've got to go into Iraq. And so these people are really writing the foreign policy based on Israeli needs.
Well, the thing that I always find interesting with Bill Kristol is whenever he is making a case for war, he will always invoke Hitler, but he never invokes Stalin. And obviously, if you want to look at who committed the worst atrocities in history, Stalin wins hands down on that scale. Hitler was a minor player in the big scheme of atrocities. But you wouldn't have a Trotskyite criticizing Stalin.
Well, of course not. Absolutely not. I mean, they like this guy. They you know, they were the ones that were funding him. The Jews in this country were funding the Bolsheviks. And of course, Bill Kristol is a leftover Trotskyite or neocon, and his associates, and in fact, they are the people that introduced the term Islamofascist in reference to the Muslims. And when they invoke the Nazis, or when they refer to Hitler, it's because they don't know history. It's because they're ignorant, because that is the bullet points that they use. And Hitler is the poster boy for characterizing anybody that they want to go after. And it's very unfortunate because, well, of course, the whole Holocaust is a fabrication. And if you look at all the scientific evidence, which hardly anybody does, then you can understand that there was no Holocaust, but they have used this and introduced it at about the same time that they were introducing all these other things, like in 1960, 1961. You had Stanley Milgram come forward with his test that he did at Yale in order to say, oh, gosh, those Nazis were evil, and look, I've got all this proof. And that was at the same time that they kidnapped Adolf Eichmann and took him to Israel and had this big show trial. All this started right about in the 60s, and it has got, well, you had also the assassination of Kennedy. So when you look at all of these events, And what it has led up to, I mean, it's really pretty, it's predictable. All of this is predictable.
The thing that really amazes me more than anything else is the complete lack of understanding that anybody has of the events that preceded World War One and that led up to, obviously, World War Two, and how the history books have been rewritten in order to suit the Zionist narrative. And very few people understand why Hitler became as popular as he was.
Well, there was a lot of anti-Semitism throughout Europe, Eastern Europe. There was as much anti-Semitism in Poland. In fact, probably it was worse there than anywhere. And there was a lot, of course, even before Hitler showed up on the scene, the Jews had targeted Germany as early as 1848, when they're always the rebellious terrorist people who foment revolution, and that's what they did in 1848, and because they were not successful in Europe, they came over here and fought in the so-called Civil War here. And were more successful in implementing their program here. But Hitler did not invent anti-Semitism. He was popular for a couple of different reasons, one of which was the economic program that he implemented. And while England and the United States were in the deepest depression, when citizens were standing in soup lines, people were going back to work in Germany, and of course the Jews saw this. Well, he also threw the international bankers out. He just
one of the interesting things about Germany after the First World War, and when the rest of the Western world was suffering through the Great Depression, the German economy was doing so well that Germany had built these huge cruise liners, and these cruise liners were banned from British ports because Britain didn't want British people to see Germans obviously enjoying the good life on a cruise ship while they were digging in garbage cans.
Exactly. Yes. It was amazing. Some of the things that he accomplished in Britain were in Germany were absolutely amazing. The Autobahn, the invention of or the creation of the Volkswagen, so that yes. every family could have a vehicle. The cruise ships, and those were for the workers. They were not for people, yes. the elite, but they were for the workers. He actually united the owners of corporations, the owners of companies, and the workers. He said, you cannot have these people opposing each other. They have to be united in having a common goal. And that's what he did. He got rid of the unions that were basically sapping money from the people. And he said, and he unified the people. He wasn't divisive. But he unified them, and that was one of his greatest abilities. And when you see pictures of him riding in a car, riding through the street, and you see these crowds of people waving at him, you see the crowds during the meetings that he had. I mean, it's amazing. The people loved him; they absolutely loved him. And Bernard Baruch said, we have got to lick that fellow. They could not tolerate what he was doing, because if he was successful, and he was very successful, then other countries in Europe would copy that. They would throw the bankers out, and they would have freedom. They would be free from the yoke of usury. And the bankers simply could not have that, and that is the reason that they had the Second World War. And as Churchill said, the Second World War was just a continuation of the First World War with a 30-year pause. And it was basically, they had to get a war going so that people wouldn't discover what Hitler had done for his country. And you have the same thing, with Saddam Hussein. The Iraqis had a very, very high living standard. Everybody had a home. Everybody was benefiting from the natural resources in Iraq. They were happy. They had a great educational system. They had a good infrastructure. Well, the bankers couldn't have that. They had to create deception in order to go in and bomb that country into the Stone Age. They took out all the, in the first Gulf War, they went in and they took out the electrical system so that I think they only had 4% of the electrical system remaining after the initial bombing. And then they sanctioned them. You know, we had 13 years of the United States government. I hate to say we, because you and I didn't have anything to do with this. It was the United States government and the people that control the United States government that went in and bombed Iraq and then sanctioned them. And you had 500,000 children who perished during that sanction. And that's the same thing that they did in the First World War against Germany, same thing that they did in the Second World War. And even if you want to go back to the so-called Civil War, the North, who was full of all of these radicals, the radical Republicans, they sanctioned the South so that the South would starve. They never changed their tactics at all. They used the same tactics because they've worked for generations.
Well, wasn't it Madeleine Albright who, when asked about the children that had died in Iraq, made some off-the-cuff remark?
Yes, she said, yes, it's terrible, but it was worth it. And she said that the United States is the indispensable country. That so basically what you said before, this exclusivity, as if whatever we do is just fine and dandy. We can go over there and bomb Syria, or we can go over and bomb Iraq or Afghanistan or Vietnam or any other darn country that we want, and nobody's going to say, oh no, that's not good. And of course the UN, supposedly the UN was established in order to maintain peace. Well, the UN is run by the same cabal. The same cabal runs the UN. It's nothing but a Jewish club. And it's kind of interesting, all of this the policies that the UN has put in place, they only apply selectively. They don't apply to the Palestinians. They don't apply to anybody except a selective group of people. So when you're talking about humanitarians and how we should be, how they should be helping people and preventing war, no, doesn't work. Because they always, with their deception, they always create a bunch of lies that the American people fall for. And they use emotion. They say, oh, look at what he's doing, these chemical weapons. Isn't this absolutely sickening? And the people fall for it every time. We fall for it because, or they fall for it, I don't fall for it, but people fall for it because, well, they cannot conceive that a government would lie, and they cannot conceive that people would lie and do these dreadful, egregious things against a population that is vulnerable and does not even have an army such as you have in Iraq. And
well,
and so
Diana, give me a second here.
Okay. I know I've been ranting here.
If you want to obviously get in my opinion the quintessential explanation of Zionism, Deanna has two books out, which you can either get from her website at spingola.com, or you can access them on amazon.com. The books are The Ruling Elite, A Study in Imperialism, Genocide, and Emancipation, and The Ruling Elite, The Zionist Seizure of World Power. And I would be hard-pressed to say which of these two books would best suit you, but I have to say I'm leaning on the Zionist Seizure of World Power, because it is, without question, one of the finest referenced books, if you really want to understand what Zionism is. It's not a religion, it's an ideology.
Absolutely. And my third book, which I'm just completing right now, is called The Ruling Elite, Death, Destruction, and Domination.
Well, judging from The Zionist Seizure of World Power, you put in a lot of hours, my dear.
Yes, I do. Yes.
And
I like doing research.
And thank you so much for sharing one of those hours with me and my listeners. Thank you so much, Deanna.
Well, thank you, Robbie, for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, and we need to do this again.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Hey, my friends, quick programming reminder, tomorrow morning, Jeffrey Bennett, Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz from 8 to 10. And we'll do this again tomorrow. Till then, see you.